Do we do car reviews on this? Do we do road tests on the Vodcast?
Of course I think that given that we are vaguely automotive adjacent, I think that's a fair game. I mean, I was talking about PC gaming, and that's way less relevant than actual car chat. So, David, the floor is yours.
Yeah, so just back from Euroland, and that meant, so where were we? We were in Spain. We're in a town called Elche, which is just beside Alicante, for a wedding. And that means hiring a car. And that means getting to drive something that you've probably never driven before, which is always interesting. So we did that thing of you go on the hire car website, and you hire have you got those categories? So like the small car, medium car, big car, and all the rest of it. This one didn't say that. This one just gave you a car type and said, you'll get something like this. So the cheapest was a Skoda Fabia or similar. So I was like, cool. So that's kind of what we're getting. So turned up and it was a Kia something. Still don't know what it was because it has no personality. Was it Stoic or Stonic?
Stonic
or something
like it.
Is it called the Stonic or is it called the S-Tonic?
S-Tonic sounds much better because then it sounds like one of those Ford Focusers with a silly badge.
It's the Kia Esoteric.
So, what a terrible car is how I can sum this car up. some of these complaints are going to be legislation. It's not Kia's fault, but they could have minimized the problems. But just through sheer coincidence, like the features that I hated on this car were made worse by the Spanish kind of road infrastructure. It wouldn't be as bad in the UK. It's just the way that the Spanish roads are kind of laid out, right? So it's got those modern features about speed limits. So it bings at you every time you go over the speed limit. But it also bings at you every time the speed limit changes. Now, the Spanish like a speed limit change. When you're approaching around about 80 kilometers an hour, it doesn't just go, well, it's 80 here, and then the roundabout happens, and then it's 80 after the roundabout. They count down to the roundabout and reduce the speed limit in sections. So you're 80, and then 50 meters later, there's a 60 sign, and then 50 meters later, there's a 40 sign. So before you've even gotten to the roundabout, it's binged at you twice because the speed limit's changed twice. Even if you're not speeding, even if you're under the limit, it's binged at you just to go, by the way, the speed limit's changed. And you're like, I know this. I have eyes. I saw the road signs. And then it brings up the road signs on the dash as well because it reads the road signs through the camera. So it shows you the road signs that you've already seen on the dashboard, bings at you. And you go around the roundabout. And then coming out the roundabout, you would think you would just have an 80 sign, but you don't. You've got another 40 sign and then a 60 sign, then an 80 sign. So it's now binged at you another couple of times on the exit of a roundabout. So you've gone around the roundabout and you've been binged at a minimum four times so far, right? And then what happens if you're over the speed limit by even 1 kilometer an hour? It bings at you each time it changes speed limit and you're still over with a different noise. But it's also a bing. So that means you've now had 8 bings in one roundabout because you're now over the speed limit slightly. Because the speed limit, it's like those reduced speed now signs. They're deliberately conservative. They're far enough away from the roundabout. And even if you're not much over the limit, you're still the slowest car on the road there because the Spanish like to drive fast as well. So you're the slowest car on the road and your car is shouting at you for driving too fast. So you've been binged at 4 times approaching the roundabout for being over the speed limit and it keeps changing. And then you're binged at 4 times on the exit of the roundabout as you speed up. You know, when you exit a roundabout, bearing in mind this car is not fast. This was probably a 1.4 liter something. It sounded like it had a cylinder missing and it certainly felt like it had a cylinder missing and it was a hybrid. If you put your foot down, it was not quick, but you would easily be over the 40 limit before it came to the 60, before it to the 80. Like you'd have to go really slow to be at 80 kilometers an hour when it changed into the 80 kilometers an hour. So you've now been binged at 8 times in that.
I have a question here. And something to add. I'll do the question bit. I was doing some motorway work earlier. quite a lot of motorway work. 270 miles worth of motorway work. And as I was coming up to a toll booth, somebody in front of me was kind of like, oh, I'll slow down. There's six lanes. Which one am I going to choose? I don't know. I'll pick this one and I'll slow down too much. Do I have to pay? where is my card? Okay, now that I've paid, what happens now?
I like it when you can see the thought process of a driver. Well, whilst they're driving, but you know exactly what's going through their head.
Yeah, and do you know what they were driving?
A Kia.
Nissan Qashqai.
A Kia Stonic.
No way. Was it?
Yeah, it that's actually
what,
was.
And that's why they were going so slow, because they didn't want to be binged at. That's
I was getting annoyed at it, even though I wasn't in the car. I couldn't hear it. I could see it. It was just annoying. And it was stupid. So, anyway, my question to you then is, do you think that those nice people at Kia actually tested this? Like, did they bring a car to Europe and go, right, car's nearly done. Let's do a test. And, you know, where do we go? Well, I don't know. It's February. Let's go somewhere nice. Let's go to Barcelona. Yeah, that sounds good. Bit of sun. Okay, let's drive around Barcelona. And, you know, the thing is beeping like mad. You know, and you get bung 100 times. So, did they go, yeah, that's it. Cool. All right. Job done.
I feel like it wasn't tested specifically in Spain. Put it that way. I've never seen a country that does those kind of countdown speed limits to roundabouts and then back up again on the other side. It's like if it's an 80 kilometer, then it kind of presumes that you brake for the roundabout anyway. You don't need to be told that there's a new speed limit because you might have an accident in the roundabout. Although judging by the way that the Spanish drive around roundabouts, maybe they will. So like, I felt like if you drove this in France, you wouldn't really have this problem because they don't do that either.
I don't think they do. They definitely don't do that here.
No, you know, definitely don't do that here.
Common sense would imply that if you see a roundabout, you slow down. And I don't think this needs legislated for. Clearly, somebody in Spain decided, I'm going to take that roundabout at 150 kilometers an hour.
Fernando Alonso, yeah.
Yeah. So, funnily enough, there's a lot of Fernando Alonso baseball caps around in shops. And I can random department store and they're selling random baseball caps with like no branding or, you know, just junk branding. And in between them all will be official Aston Martin Fernando Alonso high quality ones. Like surrounded by the €5 baseball caps, there's a €55 Aston Martin one, no Anstrol ones, just Fernando Alonso ones.
But anyway, why?
Back to the Kia. So that's problem one with it, right? So problem two with it is you turn all this off and you restart the car because you got out to go and do things and it turns it all back on. And I think that's legislation. I don't think they're allowed to just leave that off. But Matt, you posted that Ford have got a good solution to this with the Transit where you press one button and it brings up the menu and you just tap them off. And you go, well, that's the best solution you could get in this situation, surely. Kia don't do that. You have to go four or five menus deep and turn off all this junk that you don't want. And then when you restart the car, you've got to go back in four or five menus deep to turn off the same junk that you don't want.
Can I make a suggestion here?
You don't buy a Kia Stonic.
No, that's not what I was going to suggest. I mean, that's up to you. If you don't want to buy a Kia Stonic.
I've got lots more reasons, by the way. This protest is long.
Okay. I was just going to say, how about never turn it off? How about just park it up, lock it with the engine running, and that's fine. You know, go for petrol, open the fuel cap, fill it up, engine running, get home, you know, put it in your driveway. You got two keys, right? You know, that's you could leave one in it to keep going.
How long would it idle for? How long would it sit on your driveway?
I mean, it's a hybrid. It'll last about 3 weeks. You know, so you could drive it to the airport and go on holiday. And, you know, and then come back and just get in your Kia Stonic, which is warmed up and ready to go and won't beep at you. I think that's the only solution. Just don't turn it off.
There generally has been reports of people that like literally not turn it off when they're at the petrol station, and they will just fill the car up with it running to save it. And it's like that unintended consequence thing of no one's actually thought, hang on, it makes this massive danger instead. Like kind of,
it's kind of funny, really, because Scott, you'll have noticed this in your Volkswagen. If you, or certainly in my Polo and Evelyn's Touran, if you do a journey to a petrol station, turn it back on afterwards, it counts it as the same journey because the engine has only been off for like 5 minutes. The Kia doesn't do that. It's a brand new journey every time you turn that key. It resets the whole thing. It's like, just we've never seen you before.
Don't know who you are. Sorry. Yeah. Show
That's
me some
exactly
ID.
What it's like.
Yeah, yeah.
But there is something worse with the road signs and all the rest of it, because it reads the road signs in front of you. Now, I thought that they were just tied to GPS, but I didn't realize it was actually just reading the signs through the camera. And it tries to tell you what's coming up using the road signs rather than the GPS. So every so often it'll bing at you when it thinks there's something important. So you'll be driving along it and it'll go bing, and you're like, what was that? And you look down and there's a little icon on the dashboard going, there's a roundabout coming. And you're like, yeah, I know, there was a road sign there. In fact, I've taken my eyes off of the roundabout to look at the sign telling me there's a roundabout on the dashboard that I already knew. But it gets it wrong a lot, which is worrying. So I was bearing in mind, we're driving on the opposite side of the road here. So I came off a roundabout and I had to do a U-turn. So I came off to the right and do a U-turn, and I'm now going backwards, kind of on a small parallel road. And the car read a no entry sign. The no entry sign was telling people not to go on the wrong side of the dual carriageway. But I'm on a parallel road to it. So it reads the no entry sign, and obviously it thinks, danger, serious stuff is happening here. So it gives me a warning beep that sounds like when the Volkswagens do the red engine warning light, and it's like, stop the car now. And the Kia did a really loud beep, and the speedometer and rev counter, which we'll come to, which are it's just a big screen. They're not physical. It's just a big screen. Just displayed, do not enter this road, flashing at me. And I'm like, what? Like, is this some sort of military place that I'm entering? I don't understand. Like, but no, it just read a road sign wrongly. And it was like, no, you can't go down here. And I could go down there. In fact, that was the road it was telling me to take on the GPS. And it was sitting also going, don't go down this road. Also, at the same time of doing this, it's got lane assist. So it reads the white lines and tries to keep you in the middle. So it's pulling me to one side because I've now slightly off the center of my lane because I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Why is the car shouting at me? So it's shouting at me, do not enter this road. The GPS is saying, do go down this road. And it's pulling to one side all at the same time. I'm like, just let me drive the car. Like, it was significantly safer when none of this existed.
So your car was having a domestic and, you know, it was sort of you. It was trying to determine which side of the car had custody of you.
It was arguing with itself at that point because it's telling me, go down this road, don't go down this road, and you're not being accurate enough whilst I'm shouting at you, so I'm going to pull you to the side. And like, I'm not like anti-safety stuff. Like, I do think there's like some of these ideas are good ideas, but when you bundle it all together in that situation, it feels like nobody tested it, and you just end up with a situation of the car's fighting itself while shouting at me for doing what I'm told. I was not impressed with any of it.
I mean, I guess I would like to know, I assume that's the same across all of the Kia and, by extension, Hyundai range. I wonder what that's like in something nicer. Or something worse. You know, if you rent like an E-Class, is it going to be the same thing? Is it going to be terrible? Is it going to be okay?
So last year we rented a Mercedes A-Class, which seemed to be about mid-range. It definitely wasn't the most budget A-Class. It was about mid-range. That had the lane keep, and that felt fine. It's a little bit unnerving the first time it does it. You're like, oh, what was that? But then after a couple of pulls or whatever, you're like, all right, okay, that's fine. The Kia one I just did not get on with. It also pulled me into a human at one point, which I didn't like. Again, not tested in Spain. Spanish roads, so take the equivalent of a UK B road. So it's a relatively small road, but it is two lanes each way. They're a bit wider than UK roads, and they don't do the thing of putting hedges right up against the road, which means you do have a good line of sight and you can see stuff. but often there's no pavements, which means the side of the road is the bit where people walk. And there was a guy there with a high-vis vest on. He was putting out cones at the side of the road. So I swerved to go around him, and the car pulled me back towards him. And I'm like, don't do that. And if you indicate, it won't do the pulling thing. So obviously you're meant to indicate. But like, there was nothing else on the road, and I was just going around a person. I wasn't changing lane. And it was like, no, you must stay over here. And I was like, I'm going to kill this poor Spanish man. Carlos over here is going to die because the Kia has decided it is so.
This I do have a similar one. A couple of years ago, I was in Germany, and I think we had a Ford Galaxy, I think. And it's the big one. It was the big one. There was quite a lot of people and some music stuff in it. And somehow I was the designated driver. Anyway, we're on the Autobahn now. I know what that means. Everybody goes a million miles an hour. Okay. I'm driving a Ford Galaxy. Come on. You know, I'm going to sit like
full of people.
I'm going to sit at like 70 miles an hour, you know, normal stuff. But it has lane assist. That's cool. Yeah. I don't want to drift out of my lane. That's cool. But we come up to the lane assist's worst nightmare. Roadworks. So we came up to Roadworks with temporary, it was like sort of almost like permanent roadworks with temporary, these painted lines, and there was the normal lines. I think the normal lines were yellow and these ones were painted white, you know, to say, hey, follow the white ones. The car did not know what to do. The car was very confused. It was like, go left, no, go right, no, it's left, no, it's definitely left. No, I think I just turned that off. Just like, trust me, I may be a bag full of chemicals, but I know what where lanes are.
You've reminded me of something, actually. With the lane assist, when it's doing it, the little icon on the dash flashes orange. So in the corner of your eye, whilst it's pulling you to the side, it looks like a warning light is flashing on the dash. It doesn't beep, but it's flashing. And you quickly look down and go, what's that? And you're like, oh, it's telling me that I'm drifting out of lane. But I'm drifting out of lane because I'm looking at the little flashing light on the dashboard going, what is that? But whilst I noticed all this, I seen a button on the wheel that looked like a lane assist button. And I posted in the group chat. I was like, well, I wonder what this does. And Matt correctly said, if you hold it down, it disables it. And so I was like, that was nice. Turns out, though, it does a kind of advanced auto-steer thing. It's not quite a Tesla co-pilot self-driving thing. But if you press it once, it goes kind of beyond the lane assist and it will steer the car to an extent. But I couldn't work out what the extent was, because at certain points it would just give up and stop. And then it didn't beep at you. So it was like the one thing that I would probably like a beep for, it didn't beep for. It just stopped steering. So you're in the middle of the dual carriageway and it goes, nah, time out. I can't deal with this. You do it yourself. And you're like, okay, well, I need to retake control of the car again. And I know, like, you're not meant to take your hands off the wheel and stuff, but you kind of hover over the wheel just to see, and you put your hands on it, but your hands disrupt the steering, so it kind of stops it anyway. So I couldn't work out how to make this weird auto steer thing work.
It kind of sounds like you were driving around with AI assists on. Did you have suggested racing line on as well?
Yeah, that's what it was like. It's like asking ChatGPT, is like, how would you do this corner? And it decides.
And did it, as you were coming up the roundabout, like, did the line in front of you go from green to yellow, it down to red, as if to say, slow down right here, there's a corner coming up, and then you can speed back up again.
Yeah, when it went past the 60 sign, it went yellow, and then it went past the 40 sign, it went red.
Exactly.
Yeah. You see, apart from that, the rest of the car was just a bit bland. Mm. It was like driving a base level Ford Focus, where, like, there is zero emotion in this vehicle at all. The steering was really kind of light but vague, so you didn't feel anything.
Can I I decided I would just check and see, you know, I was going to look up how much a Kia Stonic is, so I typed in Kia Stonic into Google, right? You know the way it comes up with like Google suggestions, maybe you wanted to say Kia Stonic trim levels, Kia Stonic price. Do you want to know what the first one that came up? And I'd be interested if you have the same answer. Kia's tonic. Price in Pakistan. I genuinely don't really care about the Kia's tonic price in Pakistan is. But all I know is I probably don't want one.
No, I've got Kia's tonic review, for sale, boot space, Motability, UK. It's just not an interesting vehicle. And I get that most cars aren't meant to be interesting. They're just meant to be a utility for people to drive back and forward in. But it's put me off Kias, to be honest, because I kind of look at the modern Kias and I'm like, oh, they're really cool.
It's not.
But this one just put me off it. Matt, what does your search say there?
I got the price in Pakistan, but it was about six suggestions down.
No, I never got that. How much is it actually in the UK?
I don't know, but I can tell you how much it is in Pakistan.
Oh, cool.
Actually,
I'd be interested to see how the lane keep works over there.
£35,760.
I can think of so many better cars to buy for £35,000.
Well, it's PKR, £4,862,000 Pakistans for the base variant, and £5,999,000 Pakistans for the top of the line EX variant.
I'll cut the rest of the review short because I think you can kind of get my opinion on it. But it's a weird modern car. Everything's a weird screen when it doesn't need to be a screen. The rev counter is a screen, but it's not a rev counter. It's just got a digital decimal number on it. So instead of like 800 RPM, it says 0.8 times 1000 RPMs. And what? It just makes it hard to read. And I don't know where the red line is because there's no dial. It's just a number, and you're like, well, where does it redline? Not that I want to rev the tits off this thing, but you're kind of like, how far up the rev range am I when I'm driving this? I don't know.
You know what? I decided I would just quickly open up Google, and I typed in, Kia Stonic is bad. And, you know, just to see, did a lot of other people chime in and say, I have a Kia Stonic, and it's bad. Can I just read you a few of these? You know, this is the AI overview, so you can decide if you like AI or not. The Kia Stonic is often described as not great because it lacks refinement, offers an unsettled and sometimes firm ride, and can feel dated compared to modern rivals, especially in its interior and tech features. Then, there's like a list of things and reasons the Kia Stonic is considered bad, in inverted commas, or flawed. Lack of refinement, then there's a paragraph. Unsettled ride, there's a paragraph. Dated features, there's a paragraph. Low driving position, there's a paragraph. Unimpressive handling, there's a paragraph. And then here is my absolutely favorite bit. It says, positive aspects. Brackets, if any.
I can't think of any.
Well, it's affordable, it has a good warranty, and it has safety features, apparently. But
those are not features of the vehicle itself. It's affordable with a good warranty is a feature of the company and the marketing. It's not a feature of the vehicle. I would disagree with it's got outdated features. It does have modern features. There's just not very good implementations of it is the problem with them. This was a hire car, so it'd probably been abused a little bit, but it's not great when a car's done 10,000 miles and the handbrake cable no longer holds it. So you've got to put it in gear to get it to hold on even a mild hill. So yeah, that's my review of the Kia Stonic. If any other car manufacturers want to lend us cars, which they won't after that review, then contact details are in the app.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still open to testing a Tesla Model 3 performance.
I was hoping for something better. Like, can we go from Kias to Koenigseggs or something? Do they want us to test a new one of those?
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. I would Pagani, whatever the new Pagani is. They've probably got a new Zonda. Or the Gordon Murray T50, P50.
Oh, I'd love to drive a Gordon Murray car. Somebody's been hooning one of them around Knock Hill recently. That would be good fun.
I did learn from Dave's experience that there is the Hyundai Motor Group, or whatever it's called, which blew my mind. Just the fact that Hyundai have got their own kind of umbrella brand that Kia are part of, because I recognise the dashboard on the Kia is the same as my sister's Hyundai i10 with the decimal rev counter and the weird color selection that doesn't actually reflect anything.
In the settings, it gives you a theme and you go into it, and it's not a theme. It's just got three colors that are basically the same. And you're like, you oversold it with the word theme there. I didn't like that.
There's like blue, Patronus blue, and then red.
Yeah. Oh, a kind of tech-related thing, actually, with it. The EU has obviously regulated that phone manufacturers have to use USB-C now. That's what we're using. So Apple, Google, and Samsung all provide USB-C to C cables. So can we now regulate that cars need to stop coming with USB-A sockets? Because nobody ships those anymore.
That'll come in 2035.
By which time we've moved on to USB-D.
I can't remember where it was recently, but there was a socket, and it had like a normal plug socket and a USB-A, and right below that USB-C. I was like,
some hotels have got that now.
I'm okay with that. I think that's fine.
Yeah, my van doesn't have any USB-A. It's all USB. There's two USB sockets on the dash. But it also does wireless Android Auto, so I've not actually used them either.
Oh, yeah, the Kia said it had CarPlay, but it didn't seem to be wireless. So couldn't test that, unfortunately. You know what? The sat-nav was fine. There you go. There's a positive, if any, was the sat-nav was actually fine. It was everything else that was the problem.
Cool. Well, the vote does car reviews. If you are an automotive manufacturer and you would like us to give a negative review of your car, please do get in touch. If you would like us to give us a positive review of your car, just send us your car with a big check in it. That'd be great. Thank you very much.
Or send a car from the 90s.
I'll give positive reviews to Porsche 911s and Vauxhall Cavalier GSIs.
Yes. Any Vauxhall,
Steady on there.
I am, of course, open to giving positive reviews to any Citroen, especially a BX with the rear suspension that goes up and down. Ah, now we're talking. While we're talking about cars, there was a bit of a car race at the weekend in Germany. I'm not sure, Dave, if you heard about this, but there's a guy called Max Verstappen, and he's quite good at driving. Just keep quiet while I finish my sentence here. he does a lot of driving. You know, he's like, you would almost consider him a professional driver, not like a lorry driver. You know, he doesn't do like long distance driving, but I think he wants to get in long distance driving. Usually he drives, he goes on a Sunday drive. Anyway, he
spent enough time in petrol stations. He doesn't need to be a truck driver.
So he has decided that he wants to start doing long distance driving in quite a fast car. So this guy called Max went to Germany at the weekend and drove a Porsche Cayman in NLS. Okay, let's be a bit more serious. I am a Formula One idiot. I am that guy who pretty much watches Formula One and nothing else, because I don't even have time to watch Formula One, if I'm totally honest. So the idea of me sitting down to watch endurance racing, it's just not going to happen. I just don't have the time for that. But I know that the two of you are endurance racing enthusiasts. So I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about this NLS thing. And why is it called NLS? Because I guess the N is Nürburgring. The L is... I don't know. I can't even think of something. And the S is probably series.
I think you're correct with the N and the S. And the L will be Langstrecke, which basically translates to Nürburgring Long Racing Series. It's what it is. It is endurance racing exclusively at the Nürburgring. And although you're not an endurance racing aficionado, I'm sure you've heard of the Nürburgring 24 Hour, which this series is closely related to. It's not actually part of the series, but it's extremely closely related to it, to the point where I actually bundle them under the same banner in the racing lineup, because if you're watching one, you're probably watching the other. So endurance racing at the Nürburgring, the race is very between 4 and 6 hours, I think, for this. And then obviously you've got the 24-hour race, which is, as it sounds, 24 hours. And it is GT cars downwards. So the top classes, GT3s that we see at Le Mans, Elms, things like that, all the way down to, and we're not kidding here, Dacia Sanderos and similar. I think there's something else that's in with the Sandero this year or next year. Something like a Renault Twingo or something like that. I need to look that up. But you literally can go all the way down to a 1.6-litre Dacia Sandero on the same track as professional GT3 cars driven by Porsche factory drivers and things like that. So great series, definitely worth a watch, but not the easiest to watch, it has to be said. It is a complex series with a lot of rules to the point where it's almost worth not getting too deep into the rules if you just want to be a casual fan and just accepting what is going on and just taking it at face value.
So I get that there's like multi-class stuff going on here. You know, from like you said, a 1.6 this year right up to pretty much anything you want. Why? I mean, Max Verstappen is a Formula One world champion. If he wants to drive at the Nürburgring, surely he should be allowed to race his GT3 Ferrari around the ring, right?
You'd think so. Because that's how it would work in any other series, isn't it? As long as you've got an FIA license, you can go and drive whatever. There's a couple of exceptions to that in the racing world. The Nürburgring is one of them. Le Mans is another one, actually. Le Mans, you've actually got to run a certain amount of night laps and things like that during testing, because night racing is actually relatively unusual. The Nürburgring takes that just to an extreme level of everything there is different. Absolutely everything. It's got nothing to do with driver skill and everything to do with safety regulation. So Max's FIA super license means absolutely zero at the Nürburgring, which is a really funny thing to think about. That means the guy in the Dacia Sandero is technically more qualified than the entire Formula One grid until this point. I don't think Max has actually got his license yet, but he will get dispensation to get it, so it'll be fine. So the Nürburgring license is more about obeying the safety regulations than it is being a good driver. He can be the fastest driver in the world, and in this case, he probably is the fastest driver in the world, but he needs to go out there and prove that he understands the safety regulations to be allowed to race there.
So what's the process then that he will have had to go through to get this license to race?
So he was meant to do, I think it was a minimum of 14 laps in the car, and I think he was one lap short, and he was always going to be one lap short if he stayed in one car, but the plan was to have him in one car and driver swap to a second car where he could complete the race, which was also going to be a Porsche Cayman. But the second car broke down and Max didn't get a chance to actually drive it. But there is a bit in the rules that allows dispensation for this, so he got close enough and had no problems and no incidents. So there is a committee that get to vote on whether he would pass or not. And it's going to be a yes. So like, it's a non-issue. So as we stand now, Max doesn't have his Nürburgring license, but he is going to have his Nürburgring license.
Okay. And so what was he driving? He was driving a Porsche, right? He was driving a Cayman.
Cayman GT4.
Cayman GT4. Why, was it really detuned?
Yeah, so it was 130 horsepower down, I think, which I think takes it from 430 to 300, which is quite a substantial drop, really. It's about 25%. And there's quite an amusing camera view of the start of the race where everything is passing Max. Like, the car is qualified relatively well, and everything is passing him on the run down to turn one because he's 130 horsepower down on even the cars in his own class. And that is just the safety regulation stuff. That is just because the rules at the Nürburgring are so strict with safety regulations, and it's such a unique system that you have to get it right. And it's better to have rookies a bit detuned so that it's not all just flying at them in the first go. It's also funny to describe Max Verstappen as a rookie in this situation, because at the Nürburgring, if something goes wrong, the chances of somebody, probably a marshal, being injured or killed is extremely high because of the way that circuit is. You wouldn't run safety stuff like this in any other circuit, also because there's no need. but it's the only way to make this circuit work.
So what class was he competing in at the weekend?
Oh, don't even ask that.
Okay.
Nürburgring classes are ridiculous. GT3 is something like SP8, but then there's an SPX, which is also GT3, but it's homologated differently. And then I think there's SP9. SP9s are GT3s. And then there's SP10s, which are GT4s, but there's also Cup 3s, which are GT4s. It's messy. It kind of doesn't matter, almost. Because if you've got a car, they will find a class for it somehow. Like, there is literally classes there that are for cars which are not homologated into anything else. And they just go, oh, well, you go in this one with everybody else then. And then that means you end up with weird classes. Like, here's a prototype GT3 car that Porsche haven't homologated yet. But it's also against the BMW 1 series that a guy has knocked together in his garage. But that doesn't fit into the other class with the GT, the BMW 1 series, because he's put wider tires on it. Therefore, that's not in the 1 series class. It really is one of the few last cases of, if you've got a car, they will find a way to race. And it used to even be that there was an original Mini in it as well. And that was on the same track as the Dodge Viper GT2. That was too much of a difference. So I think the minimum you can go down to, I think, is the 1.6 Dacia now. Anything slower than that is not allowed. But even that is still quite extreme.
I think we should have a go. This and does remind me. Yeah, except you get onto the track and it beeps at you. It's like, sorry, the limit for you is 60 kilometers per hour.
The pit lane exit procedure is turn off all the beeps as well as the pit lane speed limit.
When you're saying about the class stuff, this reminds me a slightly unrelated anecdote. A couple of years ago, I was in Germany and I was doing a gig, and we were the opening band for a jam session, and it was a paid gig, but the pay was crap. You know, it was like €50. It wasn't a lot of money, and you know, Germany is a very cash driven economy. So you know, I was going to get 50 quid cash. You know, great, thanks for that, but they needed me to fill in a tax form. You know. And so, you know, I put in my name, I put in my address, I put in like my UK taxpayer number. And then there was honestly 3 pages of which bracket does this fit into? And there was literally a committee of Germans standing around going, well, he doesn't quite fit into this category. Well, he could fit into this category if he did that as well. I don't know about that. You know, and it was literally a half an hour meeting to try and find out which category do I fit in that I can get the €50 note that you're holding? And so whenever you said there's a lot of classes only in German motorsport, I could absolutely believe that.
Just to kind of put it in perspective, the amount of entries can vary between 70 to 130, 140 cars. So that's a lot of cars. That's a big circuit. But you can have between 10 and 20 classes. But because there's so many classes, it almost doesn't matter anymore. Because you're like, oh, they're not racing for them in classes. Like, nobody is. Nobody's racing anybody. And like, it doesn't make any sense. So it's just, you're just racing whoever's around you. And that's that. It's fine. Because it literally doesn't matter at that point. Like, it does at the front, obviously. You got GT3s competing for overall wins. But the rest of it really doesn't matter. But the best way to think of Max's car in this was a detuned GT4. It's okay. How to think of it.
And how did he do in his class?
Did really well, I think. I've not seen the exact result because it was more about not hitting anything and making sure that he obeyed every yellow flag, which is something we'll explain during this podcast as well. So the result kind of didn't matter. As long as like he didn't get in trouble, that it was going to be completely fine. I think somebody pointed out that even with the detuned power, he was only 10 seconds off the actual lap leader, as in lap time, which sounds like a lot, but the Nürburgring, it's also not a lot. 10 seconds is kind of nothing. It's about 1 second on a normal circuit. But also, well, I should kind of hope so, because the rest of his class are amateurs and he's Max Verstappen, who has won various world championships. The number varies depending on who you're speaking to. So
it's 4, yes.
We'll go with that.
In a row.
Like, you would kind of hope that he would be that close, even with the reduced power. So, but by all accounts, he did really well. He was fast. He kept out of trouble, which is exactly what he needed to do. He would have easily completed the laps required had the other car not broken, and it would have been fine. So I would say that's mission accomplished for the weekend for Max.
Do you know if this is the first time that he's driven at the Nürburgring?
It's not the first time he drove. It's the first time he's raced at Nürburgring in an actual event. He did test the ML Frey Ferrari GT3, which was running under the Verstappen.com course.
Oh, yes, I remember that. That was a few months ago.
And it was the lap record. It's disputed because it's not an official lap record because it's got to be set under certain circumstances and timed correctly and all the rest of it. But people who tested it with stopwatches at the side of the circuit have said that that was a GT3 lap record he set. So we would expect him to be pretty fast when he comes back with the ML Frey GT3 later this year.
How often does the NLS run? Like, when can we expect to see Max back at the ring?
So the rumor is, but it's not confirmed, but all of this seems to be rumors because he wasn't confirmed at Nürburgring until, you know, people saw the car getting stickered up and he was there. The rumor is that he'll be back, I think it's on the 27th, which is a couple of weeks away, and that's for NLS 9, and that'll be in the GT3 on the assumption that he gets his license, which, like we said, he probably will be in a GT3, and that will be top class. He'll be competing for the overall victory at that point as well. And kind of side note, actually, it's kind of unusual to see Italian cars in the Nürburgring. It's only a more recent thing that we've started seeing Ferraris and Lamborghinis. The Italian manufacturer didn't really like to support the series at the time when it was getting really big. The German ones do. They're throwing money at it. Porsche, Audi. Funnily enough, Bentley were quite big there. Things like that. Aston Martin. But Ferrari and Lamborghini were not that interested. And I think at one point there was one team, maybe, I can't remember what they were called, but they had a silver Ferrari. But Ferrari refused to sell them spare parts for running in the race because they just did not want to be part of it. And now you've got Max Verstappen there in what is essentially a factory Ferrari, let's be honest. Factory Ferrari in Red Bull colours at the Nürburgring for an NLS race.
So you mentioned that, you know, he'll be probably competing for the overall victory in the GT3 Ferrari. This might seem like a fairly obvious question, but how long is the race?
That'll be a four-hour one. So a standard NLS race is about 4 hours. There is a longer one every so often, which is 6 hours, but the standard is a four-hour race.
And does he have to share the car with somebody else?
Yeah, there'll be at least one other driver in the car. Some teams do three drivers, some teams do four, bearing in mind that this is an amateur race as well, so the fitness levels aren't quite as high as like a Le Mans driver or an F1 driver. So, but there will be a minimum of two drivers, in the Ferrari. Some people who are very fit will enter in two cars, and they will literally get out of one car and then get in the other a lap later. They'll just split the pit stops. And that is a thing that happens regularly.
And who is going to be in the car with him? Not obviously at the same time, but
I don't know that one off the top of my head, to be honest. I don't know who the ML Frey GT3 drivers actually are. What's quite interesting about NLS is the entries can vary every race. So it's not a set entry list every single time, partly because it's amateur as well. So it's like a lot of teams are just doing what they can afford. But also the start of the NLS season is usually just preparation for the Nürburgring 24-hour. That's what these teams use it as. So the first four or five races are just teams testing, essentially, for the Nürburgring 24-hour. Once the 24-hour happens, there's no point in them running anymore. So they just don't enter the rest of the season. So you actually see significantly less big entries later in the season. So I mean, it's pretty clear that Max is going to be racing for the win, but this might actually be a slightly easier entry list compared to having to race against factory BMWs and Porsches and Lamborghinis and Ferraris, like he would if he had started this in, for example, April.
I suppose, like, you know, working all the way up to the Nürburgring 24 is his overall goal. And this seems like a fairly easy-ish way to go about it. When is the Ring 24?
So that varies throughout the seasons as well. They seem to change it each year. So it used to be earlier in April, and then it had a bunch of red flags because it snowed a few times and things like that. They've even had it the week before Le Mans a couple of times, which is a bit of a pain in the ass. They've had it a week after, and then there was another 24-hour race after that. So you had three 24-hour races in 3 weeks at one point. It will be around May, June next year is when it will be.
So assuming he's not filing for a Formula One World Championship next year, maybe we could see him in the Ring 24?
I think that's what he's building up to. I've seen a few comments on the internet that were like, this is too early to prep for the Nürburgring 24. And I completely disagree with that. It's maybe too early for a team to start prepping for it because they're prepping the cars, really. But prepping a driver for the Nürburgring, that's different. It's like, that's just the more experience you can get with this weird race, the better. Because it's just such an unusual race. It's like nothing he'll have ever done before. And it's got nothing to do with his skill or ability either. It's all experience in traffic. Like, he has never, ever raced a car and had to overtake a Dacia Sandero at speed and judge that kind of distance. Like, he's overtaken Alpines whilst lapping them. So I suppose that's close. But he's never had anything like that. And that's got nothing to do with his ability of his driver. That's just situations that he's never had to face with. And at the Nürburgring, he will have to deal with that 50 times a lap, and he'll have to deal with that for 2 to 3 hours straight. And that's where the race is completely different. We saw that in Nürburgring 24-hour this year, where Kevin Estra made a move on a GT4 Aston Martin, which was, he's probably made that move 20 times a lap for the last 8 hours of driving. And there's one time it didn't work and it ended up with the Aston Martin upside down and the Porsche got penalized and lost the win because of it. And it was just a marginal call, and this time he didn't get away with it. And that's what changes the Nürburgring. You don't make those calls in other races, and you don't have incidents like that in other races.
So Max is, you know, like we said, multiple Formula One world champion. You know, he's been driving some of the absolute fastest racing cars there are. You know, for the last however many years, he's won all these races, he won all these championships. Why does he want to drive a GT3 around the Nürburgring?
I think it's a case of he just likes driving, doesn't he? I don't think for Max that F1 is the be-all and end-all, like just because it's the pinnacle. I think he just likes driving things. See him on iRacing all the time. It's like, his part of me is like, why is he bothering with iRacing? Like, he's driving actual Formula One cars, and here he is in a Mazda Miata thing around Laguna Seca. Like, what's interesting in that? I don't think to Max he really cares. It kind of reminds me of remember that Ayrton Senna documentary just called Senna, and he was talking about the best battle he ever had, and everybody's expecting to say Alan Prost, and he says, no, it's this boy Fullerton in go-karts. It's like some drivers just enjoy driving, and it kind of doesn't matter. And in Max's case, it's like, well, if he just wants to drive things and experience different things, in F1 you'll experience the majority of the best tracks in the world, won't you? But you won't experience things like the Nürburgring, Le Mans, Daytona. Now, you will get a lot of them, but there's a few that you just won't get to tick. So if you want to do those, but you've actually got to go and make an effort to do them, especially Le Mans and the Nürburgring, where the rules are a little different and you do need permits. Extreme version at the Nürburgring. And I think that's just him prepping for that. It's like, he's not going to have Formula One as his be-all end-all. Conspiracy theories will say that he's just getting fed up with F1 because he's not winning, but I don't think that's the case at all. I think he was driving iRacing in the middle of the night when he was winning in F1 as well, wasn't he? So, like, I don't think it's that at all. I think he just likes driving.
Do you think we'll see him at Le Mans or maybe at Daytona in a couple of years?
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Yeah, it seemed like Fernando Alonso do things like that as well. It's like he went and did the Indy 500. Probably should have won it 1 year when the Honda blew up, but, you know, is what it is. He did Le Mans with Toyota. There's a lot more of these drivers have done these races than what we think as well. Because when Fernando was doing it in about 2017, Daytona, he was sharing a car with Lando Norris at Daytona and the United Autosports. And I'm pretty sure Lance Stroll did some of it as well. It's like, I think you actually learn quite a lot doing different racing, especially traffic management stuff, which is not really an F1 thing. So, like, yeah, I think we will see him at other things. I think we'll see him at Le Mans. I think he'll want to do things like Le Mans, Sebring, Daytona, Nürburgring, that we're obviously seeing, and probably some weird stuff that we've not really thought about as well.
why do you think he's the only driver that seems interested in doing this, or at least the only driver that's gone far enough to try and make it happen?
Oh, that'd be a great just kind of general Vocast question, wouldn't it? It's like, which drivers do you think are F1 drivers and which drivers do you think are racing drivers? Because that's a good question, isn't it? Because yeah. Like, you get the impression that Max is just a racing driver. If it's a car with wheels, he'll drive it.
Yeah, Lewis is a Formula One driver.
Mm.
Yeah, and there's a few drivers, maybe not as much now, but so like Daniel Ricciardo has said that he's not interested in racing anything but F1, so he's now retired as a racing driver. But like, he could if he wanted to. Like, Daniel Ricciardo could get a factory seat in supercars in Australia, without a doubt, or at Le Mans, but he's just not interested. And Mark Webber was the same thing, because he said something like, why would he want to go and do the Bathurst 1000 when he's raced in F1? And I kind of get that. But there does seem to be a lot of drivers that just want to be F1 drivers, don't they? And I think that's actually the majority of the grid. I think Max is kind of the odd one out there. Fernando's kind of a weird one, isn't it? Because like, he's done other stuff, but still feels like he wants to be an F1 driver over everything else.
Yeah, I think Fernando's probably the closest one. In that, you know, he did F1 for a while, then realized he wasn't winning, then had to go at other stuff, and then decided, this is cool, but I kind of like F1 again. You know?
Hülkenberg's a good one as well, because he won the Le Mans 24 Hour for Porsche in a Porsche factory car. So that counts. But it also feels like he did it because he could and not because he just wanted to do other stuff. You know, but Max is very clearly just into driving everything, isn't he?
I think Mick Schumacher is an interesting one, because he actually started to impress in WEC, in Alpine. And people were like, oh, you know, he's had his go at F1, it didn't really work out, but he's doing really well in WEC. Mick Schumacher turned around and went, well, I still want to get back to F1. Like, this isn't like my permanent one. I still, my aim is still F1. So it's kind of a different kind of end of it there, a driver that's been in F1 and it's not quite worked out, but still, that is their aim. It isn't to top WEC and win Le Mans, it's to get back on the F1 grid.
Do we think Mick is good enough for F1? I'm just going to say the thing that everybody's thinking there.
No.
Honestly, I don't see it. There is a rumour that he's going to end up in the McLaren hypercar, which would be a decent fit, I suppose, a Schumacher and a Ferrari. That's an unusual one. But yeah, I don't see Mick coming back to F1. I think he wasn't far below the level, but the standard's too high, and he just didn't meet it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think his time's been and gone.
Yeah.
Well, maybe he should go and race the Nürburgring in a Dacia Sandero or a Kia Stonic.
Oh, I'd love that.
I would actually love to see, just get all of the Formula One drivers and just put them in a Dacia Sandero at any circuit.
I mean, this is the Top Gear challenge thing, isn't
yeah,
it? Of the star in a reasonably priced car, but we'll, but do it as an actual race rather than as hot laps.
Yeah, I would love to see it. I would pay good money to see this.
There was the other thing that we should probably touch on at the Nürburgring is why it's so insanely different. Because I've seen a lot of people online being like, how can you run a race like this? And I was like, it's kind of the only way you can run a race at the Nürburgring. They don't do safety regulations the same way that every other series does. There's no safety car. For example, you can't neutralize the whole circuit and put it under a safety car because it's just too big. Can you imagine a safety car train of 120 cars long? like it just doesn't work. Just think about just the very basics of that. That doesn't work. So they were the series that introduced the concept of a slow zone, of neutralizing a certain area of the circuit to bring it under a yellow flag, which we now see at Le Mans, but it's not utilized as heavily as I think race fans would like. But it's the only way to do it, the Nürburgring. Which means anytime there's an accident, you have to slow part of the circuit. Because you've got 120 cars over such a massive circuit, and most of them are amateurs, you actually have quite a lot of random little accidents. Like your Kia Sorento or whatever has gone off and bent itself on the barrier. Well, now it's stuck because it's not a real race car and it's stuck on the wedged against the barrier. So that needs dealt with. So that Hans or whoever's driving it needs to get the car pushed out. So that means you need to get marshals there. But there's not enough marshals to man it the same way as you would a Formula One circuit, with like every marshal post being full. So it can sometimes be a little bit further between marshals posts, and there's less marshals in there with less equipment. So what do? You need to get a flatbed out there. Literally, you will get a flatbed truck out there. So how do you get the flatbed truck out there? Well, it's not a racetrack where it's got all these lovely access roads to drive it around. So you drive it on the racetrack. You drive the you drive the flatbed truck to the accident on the racetrack whilst under green. So the cars are going by at speed past the flatbed, and it's just covered with a kind of rolling yellow flag situation where they wave a yellow flag when the truck's in that yellow sector and a white flag with it. And then as it goes out, then on the yellow flag moves with it. And this is what I mean about it. It's like, you won't get that in F1. That's not a thing that happens. In fact, if anything's on the circuit with an F1 car, everybody loses their minds and goes, how can you do that? But the Nürburgring is the only way to operate the race. So you got a flatbed rolling out there, right? So the flatbed gets out there, picks up the car. How does it get it off? It's got the driveway on the circuit. So now you've got a car on the back of a flatbed, orange flashing lights on the top of it, just like an AA truck at the side of the road, under green as race cars are going by it at full chat, because that's the only way to deal with it. Oh, but the barrier's bent now. Oh, how do we fix the barrier? Well, we'll get another flatbed out that's got spare Armco in the back and some big hefty Germans to fix it. And that's what they do. Send another truck out, and then they fix the barrier in that slow zone whilst they're doing it. And the slow zones as well, the slow zone, you don't just brake and go from racing speed down to 60. They're staged, kind of like we were talking about with the Kias and the Spanish roundabouts earlier, in that when you hit one marshal's post, you'll have to go down to 120. You hit the next marshal's post, you go down to 60. And then when you finally get out of it, you're back up to racing speed. These are situations that Max has never had to deal with before, because no other series really deals with this. And that's why he needs the permit. It's because if something goes wrong, you're driving into the back of a flatbed truck at full chat whilst it's doing 60 mile an hour or whatever on an active racetrack. That's why you need a permit to do it. And that's all they were testing. They weren't testing Max's skill. They were testing, can he obey all the and remember all these regulations? Which obviously he can. He's got to do it. But you've got to test everybody the same. You can't just chuck Max in and go, you're Formula One world champion, we're going to presume you know how to deal with a flatbed truck.
I suppose that's the one thing that you don't get on iRacing. You know, yeah. If you're doing an endurance race on iRacing in whatever car, you don't get a simulated flatbed.
Yeah. And the rules are pretty draconian as well. It's like, if you go through one of these at the wrong speed, you know, depending on what the speed is, drivers have been sent home for that. Some rather big YouTubers have been sent home for that. There's also the case of Michele Bortolotti in the Lamborghini, who went something like 12 red flags or something he went through before he noticed. Didn't manage to get sent home because Lamborghini were worried they wouldn't even be able to enter the race. That caused a lot of fuss. But yeah, like the rules are strict for a reason, because there are people on a racetrack in a way that you wouldn't get in other series, because there's just no other way to do this. If you had to stop the race every time the barrier needs fixed, this race wouldn't happen. If you needed the safety car every time something needed moved, this race wouldn't happen. The only way to do this is to put marshals out there. So the rules have got to be strict, because as we know, race car drivers don't really like obeying yellow flags, do they? But here, they've got to.
Well, am I right in thinking that if you open up your copy of the Racing Line app, you can watch all of the NLS action?
You can watch all of the NLS action. So because it's on YouTube, it is embedded in the Racing Line. It is not the easiest one to watch, Grant. It's actually on multiple different YouTube channels, and it's quite confusing. And I already had a lot of questions. So don't overthink it. Just open the Racing Line and it's in there. It's in your time zone. The race is streamed in English in the Racing Line. Qualifying is only streamed in German worldwide. There is no English stream of qualifying. So if you want to watch qualifying, learn German. If you want to watch the race, you can stick to English or German. But yeah, that's embedded in the Racing Line. Max's next race will not be this weekend as of time of recording. It'll be next weekend. Rumoured, but the rumours all seem to be true at the moment.
Yeah, I think he's busy this weekend.
He is a little bit. He's driving one of those F1 cars, isn't he? And there's no funny regulations or anything like that about what a driver can and can't do.
Single class racing, and it's only an hour and a half.
I'm totally here for multi-class racing. So actually, you know all these weird things that you learn when you're doing jobs, and like the Racing Line's one of those. Did you know there's multi-class single-seater racing in some countries? I'd never heard of this.
What?
So
where?
the series that used to be called Australian Formula 3 is now called AU3 because they're not allowed to call it Formula 3 because of FIA stuff. Same reason that there's GB3 instead of British F3 now. So they had a situation where they wanted to move to the new car with the halo, which is reasonable, but not all the teams could afford it. So to stop the series just dying, because that was what was going to happen, they've now just split the classes in two, and some teams are running the new one and some teams are running the old one, and it's just multi-class single-seater racing. I'd never heard of that before, and I can't think why you wouldn't do that. Why do we not have multi-class single-seater racing?
Let's get Formula 1 and Formula 2 and anything else racing in Monaco all at the same time. What could possibly go wrong?
I don't see why you couldn't do that. In fact, did they not used to do this in Formula One like a long time ago?
Yeah.
The 50s, there was multi-class.
Yeah, I think maybe, yeah, I think you're right. Maybe in the 60s. But yeah, certainly it wasn't yesterday, and there doesn't seem to be any plans to bring that back. And it's up to you to decide if that's a good thing or not. If you think it's a good thing, please write in.
I think it's a good thing. In fact, that's what we should do with sprint races. Sprint races are what we should be using to experiment with things. So how about we take the sprint race and we take the bottom 10 F1 cars and the top 10 F2 cars and just see what happens. Something like that. Let's just do wild stuff like that.
Or why don't we just put them all in Dacia joggers instead?
You could do that, but I want to see multi-class F1 and F2 at Spa. That circuit's big enough.
That'd be ideal for it, yeah.
Silverstone's long enough nowadays.
Wide enough, isn't it?
Yeah. Why is that a bad idea?
I don't know, but if you would like to express your interest in multi-class racing, if you run a racing series, please get in touch because, you know, I think we can help. I think we can probably help you out with a couple of ideas. We might know a couple of Germans who could help you out with a couple of rules as well. You can get us on whatever social media platforms we're on. Does anybody know? Matt, you know these things, right? It's
mostly Instagram, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's not really much of a social media presence at the minute.
No, we're better at podcasting than social media. Anyway, please do say hello, leave us a nice review, like and subscribe and comment and all of that. And we will see you for some multi-class podcasting next time.